Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Cameron Osteen, whose resume includes such skills as photographer, yoga teacher, and animal caregiver. And drawing on those skills, he created the Yoga Animalia Project, which involves traveling to farm animal sanctuaries and shooting portraits of the animal residents at these facilities. In the ongoing pursuit of the project, Osteen has thus far visited more than 70 farm animal sanctuaries, and in each case, while shooting, he aims to explore the personalities of the animals. We'll discuss what prompted the creation of the Yoga Animalia Project, what the project's mission is, what he's learned about the animals he's photographed, and more when I speak with Cameron Osteen in just a few minutes here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later in the show, I'll speak with Gracie Grishup, Marketing and Events Director for Pet Pal Animal Shelter in St. Petersburg, about an unusual fundraiser they're holding this Friday called Diamonds in the Rough, offering new and used jewelry for purchase by way of supporting Pet Pal, but other things going on that evening as well. We'll hear all about that from Gracie later on in the show. But before we go any further, I want to take a moment to address a recent loss in the WMNF family. Eve Prang Plews, the longtime host of the Alternative Health Show here on WMNF, passed away over the weekend. It was an especially jarring loss because we didn't know Eve was ill. I only met Eve once, but it was a wonderful experience. About 6 years ago, I produced a WMNF event in which we showed the documentary film Vegucated, followed by a panel discussion about a plant-based diet. Eve was one of the panelists. I had invited her. She added a great deal to the conversation, really seemed to enjoy herself, and made it clear to me afterward that she'd be happy to participate in any event I produce in the future. It was the generosity of spirit she demonstrated that whole night that also helped distinguish her radio show. We're going to miss her here. Rest in peace, Eve. Now on to another WMNF family member, but on a much happier note. Ronnie Elliott, who teams with Bev Capshaw to host Talking Animals in my absence, will be doing a show alongside his pal Rob McNerland this Saturday at the Hideaway in St. Pete. Rebecca Pulley, who created our opening theme song, and Rob Pastore will also perform. That's this Saturday, September 8th, at the Hideaway in St. Pete. Don't miss it. Right now, let's get to Cameron, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Cameron Osteen on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Cameron.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet. We're here, of course, chiefly to discuss the Yoga Animalia. And do you pronounce it Animalia or Animalia?
I say Animalia.
Okay. It's just funny. I just want to clarify. I do some writing for the Washington Post animal blog is called the same thing. And I've still never known how to pronounce how they pronounce it. But we're going to go with Animalia, I guess, for your project. Is that correct?
Yep, that's how it rolls off my tongue.
Okay, cool. So we're going to get to that in more detail shortly. And we've got plenty of time to address it in that kind of detail. But a core element of the project is obviously a strong affection that you have for farmed animals, a kinship, really. So I guess I'd love to know first, when did you start spending time with those animals in particular?
I actually grew up with farm animals. When I was a kid, my grandparents had a ranch out kind of in the boonies of north of Los Angeles. And that was kind of the beginning of it, of getting to know them. My grandmother really instilled a love for animals into me at a very young age, and I can remember hanging out with pretty much every farm species, except for turkeys. I didn't get to know turkeys until much later when I was actually working with a sanctuary, but that was kind of the genesis of my love for all animals, but specifically farm animals also.
And so when you were hanging out at the family ranch there, what farm animal did you kind of forge your first friendship with?
You know, honestly, the donkeys and the mules.
Okay.
They were kind of the first ones. My grandmother had the very originally named donkey Eeyore.
Okay.
And I just remember him in particular. He, I wouldn't say he was the most social of individuals, but I just was so fascinated by him. And, you know, donkeys make some of the most amazing, their language is so intense and beautiful. So he was kind of the one that stands out for me as a kid.
I have kind of my own little fascination for donkeys. Can you say just a little bit more about the language that you just referred to that they use?
Sure. The probably my favorite would be like the braying sound that they make, which I think, you know, a lot of people will be very accustomed to hearing if they've been around donkeys or see them on TV. And that is just such a distinct sound. And Eeyore in particular was very, very loud and vocal. Like, we could be pretty much anywhere on the property and hear him, and he would talk a lot. Mm-hmm. We were fairly close to my uncle. Had land not far away from where my grandparents' property was, and Eeyore kind of like looked out at the cattle on that side, and he would talk to them. So he did it, you know, pretty regularly, and that was just such a, you know, an intense memory for me of him.
Well, it sounds like he not only talked a fair amount, but also from what you're describing, it sounds like he was very emphatic when he was talking. Yeah,
definitely.
Okay. So after that early experience with your grandparents' ranch, I mean, over time, what other animal sanctuaries have you worked at or spent time at before launching the project?
Well, my introduction into the sanctuary world, because of course growing up that wasn't a concept. My grandparents weren't engaged in killing any of their residents, but my uncle had a beef ranch, and so that concept for me shifted when I started volunteering initially at Animal Acres, which is in just north of Los Angeles, and was taken over by Farm Sanctuary, and is now the Southern California location for Farm Sanctuary. So that was my first introduction to a different way of being with farmed animals.
Mm-hmm.
And especially farmed animals that in a lot of cases have some very intense backgrounds and stories. And then I worked at Farm Sanctuary for many years. And then over the last couple of years, I've worked with a few different sanctuaries. In fact, I'm talking to you from Indraloka Animal Sanctuary in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Is that a return stint? I have the sense that you were there at a previous time, but maybe it's just been more continuous than I realized.
It is more continuous. This is actually my home base now.
Ah, okay.
So, and I still travel quite a lot, but this is kind of where I return to.
Okay.
So I spend maybe about 2 or 3 months of the year at Indraloka, just over the course of the year.
And we should know for people listening that aren't familiar, that's in Pennsylvania, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, about an hour west of Scranton.
Okay.
In northeastern Pennsylvania.
Right. So here's my question then, based on a few different sanctuaries, although it sounds like, as you say, your home base is Indraloka. But what kind of differences have you noticed in one way or another from sanctuary to sanctuary, whether that's some sort of difference in the animals or just some other difference in maybe just kind of vibe or tone? Of course, there's obviously some geographic differences that probably influence some of these things. But it just sounds like as we'll get into in a few minutes, you've spent a lot of time at a lot of sanctuaries. So maybe we'll also compare later when we're talking about dozens of sanctuaries that you've been to. But just in the ones you've actually worked at, separate from whatever you've been photographing, what kind of differences have you noticed?
Regional differences are a huge portion of that, for sure, just like you said. But you know what I would say is every sanctuary has, at its genesis, you know, some human or humans who initiated that sanctuary. And mm-hmm. So their ethics and their beliefs and their views kind of start that. And then you get all of these other amazing individuals of different species who also contribute. And so each sanctuary has its own distinct character. You know, I get asked a lot, like, what's your favorite place? And, you know, I tell people I don't have a favorite sanctuary because they're all different, and I love them all for different reasons. And, you know, at the core, most of that is the individuals that create the sanctuary. And I mean that individuals in the term of human animals and other species as well.
Yeah.
And the location also plays into effect. I mean, you can go to some sanctuaries where you can just be blown away by just the magic of the landscape, And then other places that may not be situated in such glorious landscapes, but have such an intense beauty that comes from the residents there.
So I'd be interested, without necessarily naming names, unless you prefer to, what kind of contrast you could make between some of those sanctuaries? Because it sounds like, as you say, the genesis is the human or humans that created that sanctuary, launched that sanctuary, and that really does influence things. Obviously, the animal residents play a huge role too. But just for a moment, I'm kind of interested to see how you would sort of characterize the differences in sanctuaries by their founders, by the human people that got those things launched.
I think it comes down to, like, if I'll use Indraloka as an example, because I know that Indra, the founder, would be okay with me talking about it.
Yeah,
she is very deeply rooted in spiritual principles, and that comes through with how the sanctuary runs, kind of its guiding core beliefs, you know, a respect for all life. Indraloka itself means heaven on earth,
mm-hmm.
and so bringing that sense into everything that the sanctuary does. And that's just different in that some people don't have as much of a spiritual inclination.
Mm-hmm.
They might be more grounded in, like, a very deeply rooted scientific background, for instance.
Okay.
And there's nothing, neither one is better than the other. It's just different.
Right.
Which is why I have such a trouble. Like, you know, I don't have a favorite because I respond so differently to all of these different ways of thinking. And it's kind of the beauty of it that we have so many different places and that, you know, different people that visit will respond to different sanctuaries. Some of them just kind of in the contrast scale. You know, you've got some of the elder sanctuaries that have had a longer time to grow and develop and, you know, kind of mature, and they might have much larger properties. But then we're also seeing this smaller scale movement with micro sanctuaries, where we're getting this very small scale, maybe like not even an acre of property, and it becomes a very intimate environment. And so, you know, there's different sides of even just the size of the sanctuary as well.
Well, yeah, I would think your kind of purpose would necessarily be different if you were running one of those micro sanctuaries than someone that had acres and acres and acres and therefore the room to accommodate quite a few more animals. So, yeah, that would just seem fundamentally that would be a different kind of operation or philosophy.
Right. And there's magic to both sides. Like, both of those. Like,
yeah.
You know, to be in the middle of, you know, a 20-acre sheep pasture, for instance, and you've got, like, 80 sheep just, you know, doing their thing, you know, grazing peacefully, that's glorious. But it's also amazing to be on a much smaller area hanging out with maybe 4 individual chickens and getting to know them.
Mm.
And that's really also just beautiful.
Well, I imagine there's probably few people that could address the differences in sanctuary with greater authority than you, given that there's, I guess, 70 or thereabouts so far that you've been to and photographed for the project. So we'll circle back to that in a sec. But let's kind of find out more about when the whole photography thing entered the picture. So when did photography become important to you?
I started in wedding photography, actually. My best friend has a photography company in the north part of Southern California, and she needed another photographer for an upcoming wedding. And so she had already kind of been giving me some pointers as far as, you know, how to use the cameras, and, you know, I'd been playing on my own with it. And then I did the first wedding with her, and that just kind of launched it. And then I became her primary second photographer. And then I was also still at the time working at the sanctuary in SoCal, and it was very natural for me that, you know, I just started photographing all of these amazing individuals that I was working with every day. And so through that connection, they're the ones who actually taught me how to photograph them.
Hmm. How so? Like, what sort of guidance, looking back, did those first animals give you, do you think?
Well, it's been an interesting journey as far as, like, realizing how I photograph, that it's different than a lot of other people. And it's because I know these farm species more intimately than most people get a chance to. And so I understand, you know, their nonverbal communication, how they move, how to move with them. And so I'm able to capture a portrait that, you know, some people wouldn't be able to get because they don't know them as intimately. And so that, like, that was what they taught me, is, you know, I can still be part of their world, you know, in a much gentler way.
Mm-hmm.
you know, rather than kind of tramping about, startling them. So that was kind of like how they instructed me how to create portraits for them. Because my goal really is to create a portrait just like I would for a human. It's not a very different process for me. Although with the residents at the sanctuaries, I'm not, you know, guiding them into position like I would a human. But the goal is the same, of capturing the spirit of who this is as an individual, you know, regardless of species.
And just a couple of questions. I wanted to back up just for a moment. So before the wedding photography opportunity came along, were you a shutterbug of any kind, either as a kid or otherwise? Or was it just like, hey, here's an opportunity to do this with my friend that has this wedding photography business, and so I'm going to jump in?
A little bit before that, she had given me, my friend that has the company, she had given me like one of her first cameras. And I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and as I was exploring the city, I always had my camera with me. I can remember being at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, which is one of my favorite places in the city, and being able to photograph there. You can photograph their permanent exhibitions freely. And that was kind of like, in some way, that was the beginning of it, of like just exploring like how to actually do this. And I think both of my parents have artistic leanings. And so I kind of inherited that from them, this ability to create a composition through the photos. Mm. And so it was kind of where that started. And then after that, I think my friend saw that, like, oh, you actually know what you're doing. You know, you can see this, and I can hone this and help you get to a place where you can do this, you know, more consistently.
And so back to the animal side, in those initial efforts, I'm guessing that really just your familiarity with the animals, as you kind of noted, probably versus someone else kind of coming where they were with a camera or whatever else kind of long lens you might have had in some cases, probably to them at least, didn't feel intrusive the way someone else doing the same kind of thing might have been.
Right. And it definitely depends. There are certain individuals that they just do not want their portrait taken.
Oh, yeah?
Just with friends, you know, they're, in general, I mean, like, at the base of it, there's a lot of patience. And just, you know, observing, you know, kind of what's happening in the sanctuary landscape. Like right now, I'm watching the geese hang out around one specific bush, munching on some whatever growing on there, some seeds. You know, and then there's also like some of the calves are in the background just hanging out with each other, and finding those moments where, like, oh, okay, they're, you know, they're very occupied, they're doing their thing, let's go over here instead. Or, you know, everybody's kind of relaxed. They see me being able to come in slowly and, you know, just hang out. So
I'd be curious to know, like, for example, I don't really like to have my picture taken, so I'm not usually that cooperative, or sometimes I'm even kind of a pain in the neck about it. So I'd be curious by comparison to know when animals do not want to cooperate with you, as you've noted, how they make that clear. Do they just head the other direction? Do they do something more aggressive? What is their signal? It's like, hey, I'm just not into it, or at least I'm not into it right now.
Moving away for sure.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of being aware for me that, you know, and that's the case. Like if you're visiting a sanctuary, just as, you know, a regular visitor, like they will tell you if they want to interact with you.
Mm-hmm.
That was something when I was working at the sanctuary and giving tours that I tried to really emphasize. You know, there are certain individuals that want the attention. Like they will come right up to you and ask for it. And then there are others who, you know, they might be kind of curious about you, and, you know, you can hang out a little bit and give them some time to adjust. And then there are others who are just like, oh, geez, there's a human. I'm on the other side of the pasture. You know, so it is just kind of being, like, slowing yourself down and just really paying attention to what kind of signals they're giving, because they're communicating with us all the time. It's just a matter of us kind of like opening our eyes and paying attention to it.
Yeah, getting plugged in to what they're trying to communicate. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Cameron Osteen, who created the Yoga Animalia Project, which involves him traveling to farm animal sanctuaries and photographing portraits of the animal residents there. He's done this at some 70 sanctuaries so far. If you'd like to ask Cameron a question, whether it's about photography or about farmed animals or sanctuaries or whatever it might be, or just offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. So in those initial efforts shooting the farmed animals, did you feel like, wow, this is kind of cool and magical? I mean, this, I'm sure either way, it was probably a far cry from another Saturday afternoon wedding gig. But did you feel like, wow, this is something that really feels like it's important to me, or like I've got some kind of feeling from this where I want to kind of really keep doing this?
Initially, it was all of these residents that I'm working with in at the Southern California Sanctuary. It was like I was photographing my friend. And then it probably came about slowly, just realizing like I was able to capture some portraits of some of these individuals whom I became very bonded to. And as is, you know, very common in the sanctuary life, you know, a lot of them die. And then having these, you know, tributes to them in these portraits, that actually kind of instigated, like, me wanting to do this more. And then I think that the moment where I thought I want to do this on a larger scale was when I was at a sanctuary in Salt Lake City, Ching Farm Rescue and Sanctuary, and we had been taking in some turkeys from Southern California, and I drove them up with my best friend Alicia in my Prius and got them up to the sanctuary there. And, you know, we got them settled in, and then I had my camera with me, and, you know, I asked Faith, who is the founder there, can I photograph the residents who are here? And so I got to walk around with her and create these portraits. And then when I was looking at those portraits later, realizing I was able to capture the same kind of like intimacy that I was getting from the residents I worked with on a daily basis. And this is the first time I had met these individuals at the sanctuary in Salt Lake City. And that was kind of the genesis of the project itself, of like, wow, like maybe I could do this for sanctuaries all over the country.
Sounds like So now, are these roosters that we're hearing right now?
Yes.
So are they off on a slightly different clock than a lot of roosters? I just find that fascinating that at 10:30 in the morning they're doing their thing.
They will do that all day.
Oh, okay. All right.
That is one of the ways that roosters communicate, and that I think that who you just heard, that is Dharma.
Okay.
And he is probably just trying to keep tabs on many of the hens with whom he lives.
Okay, I got it. So otherwise, I thought he might be saying, hey, Cameron, grab your camera. I'm ready, man. So, but I guess he has a different message probably. So basically, the way those photos in Salt Lake City happened, because you didn't have the kind of familiarity with the animals, that if there's any sort of light bulb kind of moment or whatever, it sounds like that's when you thought, hey, this is something that I could really go further with based on my experience here at the Salt Lake City Sanctuary.
Yes, absolutely. And I had conversations at a later visit with Faith, the founder there, where, you know, I just talked to her about the idea, and it was kind of that was like, okay, yeah, maybe I can do this for all of the sanctuaries. And I really, that for me kind of was the beginning of it. And also just having done some research and realizing there's a lot more sanctuaries out there than, you know, I had originally guessed.
No, I think that's even just in preparing to speak with you today, just the fact that there's been 70 or so that you've already hit, and it sounds like there's more to come. I mean, it really does put into context that whether it's micro or others, that there are a lot more sanctuaries than probably many of us had imagined. So
yep.
We'll come back to what it might all sort of mean or what you hope it means. But let's talk for a moment just about the process. So how do you decide which sanctuary to visit next, and how long do you stay when you go to that next sanctuary?
To be included in my project and kind of like where I kind of created the structure and the guidelines for me is that there has to be some form of vegan messaging for the sanctuary. You know, like at the core, like we are creating these spaces for individuals who in, you know, our world are treated very poorly in general. And so I've run across a few places that, you know, may be doing some form of rescue, but aren't advocating for, you know, people to remove them from their diet. Mm. And so that kind of became a core tenet for me of, you know, like we're creating these spaces, like these individuals, you know, we talk about them being ambassadors a lot in the sanctuary world. And, you know, it's about highlighting their voices. And then in contrast to the, you know, billions of voices that are not heard. So that was kind of a foundational thing for me, is like, okay, there needs to be some form of like vegan education or advocacy happening that the sanctuary is doing. And then also focusing on sanctuaries that are really themselves focused on formerly farmed species. So, you know, I've run across some, you know, really great places that, you know, maybe are focusing on like potbelly rescue, which is crucial and critical. But for my current project, where it is, you know, I'm looking for the sanctuaries that are rescuing chickens and cattle and pigs. You know, farm pigs. So, like, looking at some places that are focused on horse rescue, for instance, there's a lot of places that are rescuing horses, but most of those, you know, I'm not going to currently. I do envision the project expanding at some point, but right now, the world I know most intimately is the farm animal sanctuaries. So that's kind of who I'm focusing on and the guidelines of where I'm going. And then is logistically, I travel a lot to VegFest all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I'm traveling, that kind of dictates like, okay, I know I'm going to Washington, you know, so who can I visit that I found in that area?
Mm.
And so that, and then trying to figure that out, like right now, since I'm in the Northeast, and I've got quite a number of sanctuaries in New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York and Pennsylvania to visit before I trek west for the winter.
I see. So there is a, sounds like a seasonal element to it, as well as there's kind of a philosophical underpinning about the vegan messaging. There's that, are we really talking about farmed animals at this particular sanctuary to, at the moment, at least kind of make sense for your project? And then there's just the practicality of where you may be traveling to or from.
Right. Yeah. Like there's a new sanctuary in Connecticut that I'm hoping to get to before winter hit that I've known for a while, and she's been trying to get me out there for at least a year, and it has not worked in my schedule. I'm hoping that to make that happen this month, actually.
So given those guidelines, let's say you do get to this Connecticut one that you've been aiming to get to. Assuming it's not a micro sanctuary, most sanctuaries would have probably more animal residents, I'm guessing, than would be practical for you to shoot for the project. So how do you decide which ones will be the ones that you'll focus on for portraits?
You know, it's mostly just about showing up and being present at the sanctuary, and just moving amongst the residents and, you know, capturing portraits as I go. I never really have an objective of like, you know, I am definitely getting a photo of an individual, you know, a cow or a, mm-hmm. you know, a chicken. That's only happened on very rare occasions. Like I did some photos for a magazine and they wanted specific individuals. And that was a very different experience for me.
Sure.
Because it actually took me out of my meditative space of just being with them, because I was like, oh, I have photos of these individuals. And so my normal is I just show up and whoever, you know, the portraits come as whoever I'm hanging out with. And so I try not to have an attachment to like what I'm capturing at the moment. I'm just capturing. You know, I'll try to move amongst all of the residents and just see who, you know, comes through and wants the attention or is amenable to having their portrait created. And also working in the structure of how the sanctuary flows. Like I go to a few places and be like, oh, do you want treats or something? And I was like, I usually say like, no, like I just want them doing what they're doing. I don't want to coerce them into moving a certain way or being in a certain place. And so a lot of that again is just the patience. And I want to capture what they're up to on their own terms.
Right. Just what they'd be doing tomorrow or yesterday, what they were doing, even if you weren't there with a camera. So
yeah.
But still, is there a certain behavior or look in the eyes or something that even with that kind of sort of low-key approach that persuades you, hey, this one might be my next portrait?
If they're showing a lot of interest in me or what I'm up to, that will typically mean like that particular individual will get, you know, hundreds of photos.
Right. Because they're the opposite of camera shy.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you know, not necessarily will I only focus on that individual for that moment, you know, keep my view open of what everybody is up to, but certainly there are individuals that I'll come across who are, you know, their curiosity is piqued and they want to like, you know, see what I'm up to. And so you know, they'll interact with me more directly. And, you know, this would be the true for humans. Like, it's so much easier to photograph a human who is engaged in the process and having fun with it. It's the same with these guys. Like, if they're, like, really resistant, like, the portrait's not going to be good because, you know, in that instance, I would be forcing it. Like, I try not to do that. And that's part of, like, you know, this is something even with humans, like, trying to bring a level of comfort and to the individuals you're photographing, like, so that they're at ease. Yeah. You get more natural responses. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that when you mentioned a moment ago that kind of running counter to how they really have described how you like it to work, that shooting for that magazine and it just didn't sound like you really took to it much and they took you kind of out of your normal space. It almost sounded like it was in some ways a slight return to the wedding photography days just because you have certain missions and you got to get these shots and the family and the bride and the this and the that. And it sounds like that in
right.
some ways was what was being asked of you, even though these were still farmed animals. Let's get a caller involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Cameron Osteen.
Hello,
it's you.
Hi, I'm just wondering if she or if Cameron... promote veganism with her portrait, or is she just raising money to help with the sanctuaries? Does she talk about how the animals have been treated before they got to the sanctuaries?
That's actually a really important part of what I do with the project. So when I put out images of the residents, I also try to include, at the very minimum, it'll have who they are, their name, what sanctuary they live at, and where that sanctuary is. But I also try to include their history. So it'll tell, you know, in a very short paragraph, what their rescue story is, like if they came from the dairy industry or fell off of a transport truck, but then also who they are as an individual, like their personality, like how they interact with, you know, their herd, with humans, whatever it may be, that makes, you know, that little window into their personalities. And then also, you asked about giving back to the sanctuary. So that's actually part, like, built into the project is an ability through selling my portrait to then contribute back to the sanctuaries. And that usually is in the form of art pieces for their auctions and for their gift shop that I'm able to help them raise funds through selling or auctioning off the portrait.
All right. Thank you, caller. Appreciate
your
question. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We're in our final moments of speaking with Cameron Osteen, who created the Yoga Animalia Project, for which the photographs the animal residents at farm animal sanctuaries, having visited some 70 sanctuaries thus far. We do invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. And we should mention, too, that the website is Yoga Animalia, like just the word animal with IA at the end, .com, yogaanimalia.com, to see some of the portraits and information and all kinds of other things, blog posts, etc. In our final moment or two here, Cameron, so how would you describe the mission of the Yoga Animalia Project? Is there something cumulatively that you're going for, and it's separate from just the individual animals, and again, making those portraits available for sale, and as we've noted in response to your caller, helping promote the vegan message and the message about that particular animal's story before they got to the sanctuary?
I think right now my next goal is the creation of a book. It'll be a hardcover coffee table style book mm-hmm. of the portraits with their stories. So that's actually what I'm hoping this winter I'll be able to, like, get myself together enough to really go through the photos. Currently, I have probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 40 to 50,000 photos to go
wow.
through.
Wow.
There's photos that I still have yet to even look through.
Yeah.
So part of it is, like, spending winter just, like, really getting in there and finding the ones that, you know, will be included in the book, because I want the book to be a collection of portraits from all the sanctuaries that I've been to, and then tell the stories of these individuals and really celebrate the individuals themselves. And I think that's kind of the underlying mission of the project, is to, you know, showcase the individuality of our formerly farmed friends that we, you know, are rescuing through sanctuary work, and really convey to somebody looking at this photo that, you know, this may be, you know, a striking photo of a chicken, but, you know, this is Odysseus, and this is his story, and this is where he comes from.
Mm.
So it's not just a generic stock photo, for instance. And
sure.
Yeah.
Far from it, yeah. So we have maybe a minute at most less, but one thing we haven't really even touched on yet is yoga. So for starters, of course, it's one of the three words in the name of this undertaking, the very thing we've been discussing. So what does yoga mean to you?
I use that word very specifically in the philosophical context. In the modern interpretation, yoga means union. So my goal at the project is to unify the non-human animal with the human animals that are viewing the images. And so that's why that word comes into play in that philosophical context. And then Animalia being the scientific classification of the kingdom that we're all part of. So it really is, it's the joining, and showcasing that, you know, these are individuals just like we are. And we are all in this together, for sure.
Great. I think that's the perfect point at which to leave it. So we've been speaking with Cameron Osteen. Again, it's the Yoga Animalia Project. The website, one more time, is Yoga Animalia. Again, it's animalia.com. And Cameron, thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals and filling us in on the project. Really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you, Duncan. I really appreciate it.
Later on the show, we'll speak with Gracie Grishup of Pet Pal Animal Shelter about their Diamonds in the Rough fundraiser happening this Friday at Kozuba and Sons Distillery in St. Pete. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. We're going to hear something new from Dimitri Martin, taken from a CD released just a few days ago and serves as a companion product to his new Netflix special. This is a portion of a piece called Pets to Cats, new from Dimitri Martin in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Pets are animals that are not delicious. I don't think that was by accident. We probably tried to eat all of them. Like, okay, these don't taste good. We'll give them first names and sweaters. We'll hang out with them. We're going to eat everything else that we can. Asia, you guys have so many people over there. If you need to eat some of these too, no judgment. You can eat the friends if you have to. We even eat birds. We eat birds. I can't even imagine how that started. Somebody's like, you see that flying up there? I'll put that in my mouth. That looks good. You can eat that with the feathers. No, I'll take them off. I'll do some to it. But yeah, I'll eat it. We even eat the unfertilized eggs of the birds. It's like, when does life begin? I don't know. Breakfast? Scramble that thing up. Seems like there's a fine line between having a hostage and having a... I messed up my joke. It's only got like 15 words in it and I couldn't get them right. I felt confident too while I was saying it. I was like, between a hostage and a hostage. Wait a minute. It seems like there's a fine line between having a pet and having a hostage from a different species. Yeah, that's it. Right. I can fix it. You go to somebody's house, they're like, close the door, he'll get out. Close the door, he'll get out. Okay. What kind of relationship do you have with this dog? Dog comes up. He's not looking. Open the door, let me out. Come on. Let me out. Go open the door now. Woman put sunglasses on me. Will you open the goddamn door?
That was Dimitri Martin with a portion of a piece called Pets to Cats from his new CD, Live at the Time. Now it's time to speak with Gracie Grishup of Pet Pal Animal Shelter about its fundraiser Friday. This is Gracie Grishup back on Talking Animals. Good morning, Gracie.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me again on Talking Animals.
Of course. So first, I'd like to ask you to just give maybe a brief overview of Pet Pal Animal Shelter. What is it and what does it seek to do?
We are a no-kill shelter located in St. Petersburg, just a couple blocks from Tropicana Field, close to downtown. We have a full house normally all the time. We've probably got about 30 adoptable cats and another 25 to 30 adoptable dogs, and then an entire side that's full as well in rehab, recovery, waiting for space to open up on the adoptable side, et cetera. Yeah, we're quite busy.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure all these different efforts need to be funded in one way or another, which I imagine brings us to this newfangled fundraiser that we are here to discuss today. So tell us about Diamonds in the Rough.
So we're really excited. I'm personally like really, really giddy and excited. This is going to be our first Diamonds in the Rough fundraiser. It's taking place this Friday, September 7th, at Kazuba and Sons Distillery, which is located on Fifth Avenue South, actually just a couple blocks away from the shelter, which is quite convenient.
Sure.
We want you to come find your sparkle, is our slogan that we've been, that's kind of sticking with everybody.
Okay.
Basically what we're doing, first of all, 100% of the funds raised go directly to our shelter this Friday at Diamonds in the Rough. And basically we have a bunch of jewelry. We have anything from vintage jewelry, costume jewelry, new, barely used, all kinds of different jewelry that we're going to be pricing at really incredibly low rates. And we want everyone to come and find their sparkle and maybe think about gifts for the holidays or just redoing your vanity. I don't know. It's all for good
cause. Nice. Yeah.
So, yeah. We have a lot of vendors that are going to be there. Do you mind if I mention those?
No, please do.
Okay, wonderful. Rock Shop Fine Gems and Jewelry, Healthy Hemp Outlet, Pinellas Chocolate Company. What goes better than puppies and chocolate, right? Prima Water, DA Cafe, Pet Food Warehouse, and we'll have a food truck by Smoking Guns Barbecue.
Wow, that covers quite a bit of ground. That's great.
Yeah, it's a dog-friendly affair, so bring your food truck, too.
And sorry if you said this and I missed it, but I know it's this Friday, but from when to when, what are the hours?
Oh, I don't think I told you the hours.
Okay.
From 6 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Okay, so Whenever people get off work or get a chance to get over, there's still a nice three-hour window come by, look at the jewelry, get a bite to eat, or get some other kind of cool thing from one of the vendors.
Cocktails, Kazuba and Sons Distillery will have cocktails. So yeah, it's going to be a fun time. And, you know, with all this weather that everybody's been, you know, dealing with their own pet, bring your dog out.
Come yeah.
Us, do some shopping, browse, and enjoy the evening. Maybe clock out an hour early. I don't know.
Oh, wow. Okay, now you're suggesting people go rogue here, Gracie. This is something. But also, for people who might be driving around or came in late or whatever to the interview, there is a Facebook event page, I believe, for Diamonds in the Rough?
Absolutely. You can also get it from our website, petpalanimalshelter.com.
Okay.
Diamonds in the Rough on Facebook is Diamonds in the Rough, R-U-F-F, of course.
Of course. How else could you spell it in this case? My goodness.
Of course.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to give you a little shout out on that page too, so anybody can also visit your page and give you a like as well.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's so great. Well, Gracie, great talking with you as always, and looking forward to Friday's event. And thanks once again for making the time to join us on Talking Animals.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity to be on and talk about it. Thanks, Duncan.
Okay, Gracie. Take care. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye.
Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including the noon hour midpoint with Noah Lillet. Then at 1 p.m., John Gilmore presides over executive session. Then the music kicks back in at 2 p.m. with Scott Elliott in the All Souls edition of It's the Music. Meanwhile, on this show, as a prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a copy of the great movie Blackfish. In fact, let's get to that right now. Name That Animal Tune is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. And there will be a prize, as I say, a DVD copy of Blackfish to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals on WMNF.
There's a crow flying, talking ragged tree to tree. He's black as the highway that's leading me. Now he's diving down to pick up on something shiny. I feel like that black crow sky.
Can you name that animal tune? That's the question that's before us now. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Bob Loria is up next with Radioactivity. Next week, my guest will be Marco Otta, part of a team of researchers who conducted a study of so-called free-ranging dogs, as well as pet dogs, in Bali, Indonesia. And it really yielded some very surprising findings with important implications for, primarily for, I guess, our pet dogs. So I invite you to join me for that conversation next Wednesday here on Talking Animals. I also invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow me on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter there to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals headquarters. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind, animals. Be kind, others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. It's the last local radio station in Tampa Bay. Thanks for listening. Speak again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.